Hello, this is Anthony Gismani with a special welcome to our podcast this week. It's the 45th annual Vancouver International Wine Festival, and we'd like to welcome you from wherever you're listening worldwide. Our show today is brought to you in part by our hotel partner, the Weston Bay Shore Vancouver, home base for the BC Food and Wine Radio team while we're at the festival. If you're considering visiting Vancouver, there's no better place to be than the Weston Bay Shore. Steps from the West End, Stanley Park, and Vancouver's famous seawall with stunning North Shore Mountain and Cole Harbour views. Now, enjoy the show.
And now, it's BC Food and Wine Radio. Live from our spotlight stage at the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia. Welcome to the 45th annual Vancouver International Wine Festival. We're coming to you from the floor of the Trade and Convention Center, surrounded by 149 wineries from around the world. There's 71 Italian wineries in the room, followed by a large contingent of local producers from across British Columbia. Today we kick off the show with Justin Hall. He's a member of the Osoyoos Indian Band and the winemaker at Enkamip Cellars, a winery located on native property in Osoyoos, about as far south as you can go in BC, only minutes from the U.S. border. Then, Michael Coleman, winemaker at Osoyoos La Rose, joins us to talk about the Big Freeze and some of the opportunities he sees moving forward. We'll also explore the current state of the 2013 Osoyoos La Rose Grand Van, a decade from the harvest. A little further up the road on the Golden Mile bench, Jean-Marc Enixon. He's the winemaker at Colmena Family Estate Winery in South Oliver, BC. He'll drop by to talk about two very different wines, Hypothesis, a red blend involving all of the Bordeaux grapes, and Unicus, a rare look at a Star Gruner Veltliner. But up next, Richard De Silva, co-owner and winemaker at De Silva Vineyards, will visit the show to talk about Chardonnay and Pinot Noir and the vineyards his family have been farming since the late 1950s. This is BC Food and Wine Radio. We're live at the Vancouver International Wine Festival, and you are set to go.
There's more still to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio, live from the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Brought to you in part by the Weston Bay Shore Vancouver, our official Vancouver hotel partner. An elegant base to explore Vancouver. Book your stay today at the Weston Bay Shore Vancouver.
Diora, the culmination of a more than 30-year vineyard-to-bottle journey in the Santa Lucia Highlands and the family-owned San Bernabe Estate in Monterey, California. Diora's fruit from their vineyard flourishes in the radiant Monterey midday sun, while refreshing breezes coax the complex flavors found in every drop. Diora, indulgence begins in the vineyard, now available at select liquor stores across BC. Find out more at diorawines.com.
Your favorite wines delivered right to your door. It's easy when you become a Liber Estates Rebel. Rebel Wine Club members enjoy regular shipments of Liber wines for your cellar, along with complimentary tastings, VIP treatment at the winery, and more. And with easy and convenient online ordering, your wine will be at your door before you know it. Discover more at LiberEstates.com. Simply great wine.
Penticton, the hub of the South Okanagan. The place for winter adventure and Okanagan wine. Enjoy champagne powder and après-ski at Apex Mountain or Baldy Resort, or step into cross-country skiing at Nickel Plate Nordic Center. After a day in the snow, slow down and experience one of over 80 nearby wineries with an intimate winter wine tasting. Before you go to Penticton, make sure to check the website for information on tasting room hours, winter highway, and ski hill conditions. And for more trip inspiration, go to visitpenticton.com.
Now back to our spotlight stage at the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Here's Anthony Gismondi.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good.
Hello, British Columbia. Welcome to the show. Our guest is Richard De Silva. How could you not tell? Who feels better than Richard? No one. How are you, Richard?
Doing well, sir. And what about you?
I'm fine. We didn't talk all that long ago. We talked a lot about the winter freeze. I thought we'd just talk about wine for a few minutes today, because we still have to sell wine, right? You still have wine to sell? And
absolutely, yeah. No, we still have wine to sell, which is a fantastic position to be in.
Yeah. Well, let's start, like, DeSilva, you make a bunch of wines, but so what's the focus at DeSilva, would you say? Like, I think you wanted to talk about a couple of wines that you're very focused on at the moment.
Yeah, you know, we don't ever talk about it, it's kind of our what we have most planted and most experience has been actually both Chardonnay and Pinot Noir.
Yeah.
And we've been, Chardonnay was actually the very first, that and Chenin Blanc were the two first white varieties I started working with. And so we've had a long history with those grapes, and there I'm at a bench. We're predominantly Pinot Noir focused, so on our own estate, on our own Blenheim Hill vineyard. So those have been kind of silently our workhorses for us. It's what we've been known for a long time.
And how old are the vines, the Pinot and the Chardonnay vines then in that?
Some of the Chardonnay we have was planted in the 80s.
Okay.
So there's some age in them. Our outwash vineyard in Oliver was planted in the mid-1980s. And then we've had, but the bulk of it were planted in the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a little bit of everything in between. But predominantly the Pinot Noir and Chardonnay is our Naramata Penticton focus. We do have a small unicorn site in Oliver, very cool spot on an old kettle lake. Bull rushes. It's got this cool little microclimate, so it seems to work quite well there. So yeah.
Are you a clone guy, or you just planted what you had, or?
You know, my litmus test is what's growing. I think this year is a prime example of finding what works consistently year after year.
Mm-hmm.
And so for us, we just basically take cuttings from sections of our vineyard that have shown robustness.
Yeah.
And
get yourself a Massel selection, and then that works best for
everybody. It's been working for decades for us, and I think certainly we'll enter new genetic material in and do some experimenting, but the litmus test is what grows and what makes tasty wine.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's start with the Chardonnay. You brought the 22.
Yes.
So would you say this is mostly Naramata? Or?
So this is Blenheim Hill, which is where my wife and I live. It's our own small vineyard right across from where the winery is, and a Lazy Dog, and this is really tiny. We're talking all together, we're about an acre. So that's it.
Yeah.
So this has been the other Chardonnay. We've been selling that off to other producers in the valley. But right now, this is Lazy Dog and Blenheim Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And so the winemaking of this is kind of interesting. What we did with this is stainless steel fermented, but we'll put them into brand new American oak barrels for 8 weeks. And so we're looking for just that hint of that oak spice, that baking spice that it gives to it without being overpowering.
Mm-hmm.
What I like about the Chardonnay in the bench is it still retains that acidity, which makes it crisp, clean, a great food wine, which is important for myself. And,
Why did you choose American oak? You just sort of described why you did, say, versus French oak, though.
I've tried both, and I just particularly like
the American.
Prefer the American in this particular style. It just seemed to give it a bit more of this nuance, especially when you're talking about such a small contact time. 8 weeks is not a long time.
No. A lot of calamities in the past few years. What about 22? Was it a pretty normal year?
It was actually quite a hot year, actually.
Yeah.
And we, again, in those kind of vintages, knowing where to grow them to create wines that are balanced is really important. I found that some of the Chardonnays, for example, Pinot and Burgundy grapes down south, tended to be a little less structured, and so for me it's
a little more cooked. You don't have to say it.
So I think for sure, I mean, it's one of the things I think that the Okanagan is definitely evolving is where these subregions are and what varieties in the subregions should be focused. So
Naramata is such a sweet spot too. I mean, it just seems like it's just everything is just nice there. There's no nothing really.
Especially for varieties like Pinot Chart and the other one, which we make our Legato Merlot and Nobreza from, is the Merlot in the bench.
Yeah.
Merlot doesn't like those really intense heat. It doesn't like really a lot of cold.
Yeah.
If all the vineyards we grow Merlot from the U.S. border to Summerland, and we have several vineyards, consistently year after year, the Merlot on the bench has just proven to be spot on.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. This is delicious, by the way. It's a lovely freshness in the wine, too. So after you come out of the oak, what do you do with it? You put it back in tank for a bit, or you bottle it?
Yeah, well, we let this sit on the lees for about 6 months. Mm-hmm. And so you get that crisp acidity. You get a bit of that kind of, that a little bit of Melba toast exists in there. But it's got this fresh, clean, with some weight to it. And I want to capture that essence. So I try to get it to bottle as soon as possible after that. So we're talking within 6 to 7 months. Immediately after that contact, it does sit on oak for the 8 weeks in the lees.
Yeah.
We want to capture that freshness as soon as possible.
It has a bit of, like, I don't know how I would describe it, a bit of citrus. Something that, there's a slight bit of bitterness that sort of balances, takes on the fruit, you know, upfront fruit, and really balances the wine nice. It keeps it alive, you know?
And so for us, a lot of this is how we crush and process the wine. It's very kind of old school. I don't mind having a little bit of mog, you know, a little bit of that stem in there, because it just adds those textures you're talking about.
Yeah.
Specifically when you're talking about with food.
Yeah.
It kind of makes it more dynamic. So, yeah, we use the same process to make the Chardonnay as we do in the Pinot Noir.
Yeah.
Same setting. We don't treat it any differently. And it like you said, what you're picking on is exactly what I'm looking for. You have a little bit of that.
Yeah. Well done. And you have some to sell.
I actually do have a good amount of that. So,
and normally people come buy your wine online, or in? Can they buy it in town?
We have mostly from outside the winery. We're talking about select private liquor stores.
Okay.
Save-On Foods has been a great supporter as well. So we do have in some of their stores for sure. And then for sure at the winery, at our restaurant on site, or our wine club.
Yeah, the kitchen.
The kitchen.
I love that restaurant.
So it's becoming a bit of iconic status.
It's got the status. Okay, I don't want to run out of time. Let's do the Pinot, and then we can maybe chat a bit about the kitchen too. This is 21, so it's a different vintage.
Yep.
How was 21 compared to 22 for you?
It was definitely a bit cooler. The thing with 21 had fires that year, but it didn't affect these vineyards, because this is from the Naramata bench again. So for me, some wineries had a lot of challenges, specifically saying OK Falls or down south. For us,
there's... Wow. That's very pretty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is our number one selling red wine outside of our Vino Tinto.
You manage the fruit really well there, because sometimes, you know, the Pinot's too thick or it's too fat or there's something. There's just a really nice tension there. As soon as you put it in your mouth, you get the acidity and the fruit together. Red fruit, yeah, really nice.
One of the things about when we make that wine is that we let it go up to almost 28 to 30 degrees fermenting.
Wow.
We treat it exactly the same as I do my Cab Sauv or Merlot. We don't do
whole
cluster.
Don't tell me that. No, don't tell me that.
No, because for me the thing is that... So one of the cool things that makes it quite different is we do 100% leaf pull in June.
Oh.
What we do with that is building thicker skins, and that thicker skins give this wine a lot more...
You mean
more
in the fruiting zone?
In the fruiting zone.
Yeah, right on. Yeah.
And so what you have is this thicker skin, So it can go through that same process of making it. And the truth is, in the wine, we've been doing that particular wine style now for over a decade.
Yeah.
A decade. So
very delicious. I don't know. It seems to me, is it sort of maybe a 5 to 7 year wine? Or?
Yeah. I think it's, for me, it does definitely need, you know, it does benefit from a year or two in the bottle.
Yeah.
But... After that, it just depends where you like your Pinot at. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, I this is definitely on the more powerful side of Pinot. It's really more bodied. It's very unique to us, and that's why we have a bit of a cult following for that. We have a lot of... It's specifically with restaurant clients, are pairing this with food.
Yeah.
Really enjoy that.
Yeah, it's a nice set of wines. Okay, let's talk a little bit. Like we've been talking about, of course, the weather, the problems, the issues with growing vines and that, but you're open for business in 22. You have a lot of wine to sell.
Yep.
So it will be sort of business as usual? And how will you proceed through the season?
You know, like for, like, as you know,
will the restaurant be open?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. We you know, we're very old school that way. Our farming heritage has always kind of instilled in me that keeping inventory, building up inventory reserves,
yeah,
and to deal with these kind of calamities that happen to us. And we will be fully open there. You won't notice any effect to our business whatsoever. Like we're really looking forward to this vintage this year. Like, and we're looking to welcome people up there for sure. So,
wow. Richard, so great to catch up with you and taste the Pinot Noir and Chardonnay and stay focused on it for this part of the show. I actually learned a lot just talking to you today about these two wines. Folks, you should check them out, and of course, check out the winery and get yourself a reservation for dinner on the deck at the kitchen, as long as you're not in a hurry.
Yes.
If you're in a hurry, don't go.
Nope. He'll let you know that. He'll ask you to leave.
I think it's right on the menu.
It's actually on our menu. Yeah. It's an experience.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
We'll be up soon to see you.
Cheers.
That was Richard Da Silva. He's the winemaker and co-owner of Da Silva Vineyards. Up next, Michael Kuhlman. He's the winemaker at Soyuz La Rose, joins us on the BC Food & Wine Radio Network.
There's more still to come. This is BC Food & Wine Radio, live from the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Brought to you in part by the Westin Bayshore Vancouver, our official Vancouver hotel partner, and Elegant Bays to Explore Vancouver. Book your stay today at the Westin Bayshore Vancouver.
Your next corporate event or retreat deserves the best. The Watermark Beach Resort. With conference spaces to host large or small gatherings, they can create your perfect event or gathering. Enjoy the culinary excellence of 15 Park Bistro, open daily for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Make sure to follow them on Instagram and Facebook at 15 Park Bistro for the latest updates on their brand new dinner series. To make a reservation or learn more about events at Watermark, just go to watermarkbeachresort.com.
Hi, this is Paige Schultz, Marketing Manager at Visit Penticton, calling all craft beer lovers. Penticton is the place for you this spring. Joining me is Kim Lawton with the Penticton Beer Blocks, Penticton's craft beer collective. Kim, what makes our city such a great destination for craft beer lovers?
Our craft breweries truly are special. We work together to give Penticton one of the best craft beer scenes around, and we were recognized for this when the Lonely Planet named us Canada's Craft Beer Capital. We're also thrilled to have some fantastic craft beer-related events in Penticton, such as the Okanagan Festive Ale.
That sounds fun. Tell us more.
It's one of the largest and longest-running annual beer festivals in the Pacific Northwest, giving beer lovers the opportunity to sample a range of craft beers and ciders from over 65 breweries and cideries. There's also great entertainment, fabulous food, fun, and games. This year is on April 12th and 13th at the Penticton Trade and Convention Center.
Amazing. Thanks, Kim. For information on Festivale and all other events and activities in Penticton, go to visitpenticton.com.
It's BC Food and Wine Radio, live from the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia, and welcome to the show. Our guest is Michael Kuhlman. He's the winemaker at Soyuz La Rose. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Anthony.
You're looking fairly upbeat.
As upbeat as you can be at the moment. I think we need to look at the positives.
Yeah.
We've got a wonderful wine-growing region. We've got great consumers.
Yeah.
And I'm always positive.
So there's been a fair bit of damage. A lot of people have been reassessing what they're doing. You guys had a pretty good plan from the get-go. What's your reassessment at this point?
Yeah, I don't think we need to... Our plan from the beginning has always been to focus on the land and the viticulture and the terroir. And the terroir is somewhere where you can point to where the grapes are grown.
Yeah.
And we strongly believe that the best place is in the Okanagan. We love the wine-growing region. And from the beginning, we've always wanted to focus on making the most out of the potential here. And so, yes, maybe we have to maybe reassess our plans, but I don't think we're going to move away and start ripping out Merlot and planting different varieties.
Right.
We know it works in the Okanagan. Yes, it's a change in climate, and we're going to have to adapt for these freak weather events, but I think we're just going to have to grit our teeth and get through it.
Mm-hmm. Well, in this weather event, we were just talking about it. See, You say this cold event, it just sort of sat on the vineyard. It didn't move, because I know that you have a lot of air drainage there and slope.
It didn't. We're quite, our vineyard, we've got this really special piece of land, sort of on this bench on the natural drainage, and we're very, very immune to spring frosts, because the cold air just comes down and it just rolls off the vineyard.
Yeah.
What we had in this winter frost is it was just a massive cold air just moved into the valley and just sat there, and there was no temperature inversion.
Yeah.
So the higher you were, the colder it got.
Wow.
And as our vineyard is sort of perched on a bench above the valley, it was 2 to 3 degrees colder up there than down at the bottom. Mm-hmm. And we've been wiped out.
So we know there's bud damage. It'll take some time yet still in the spring, or will you know happening with the vines?
I think at this point we're fairly confident with our assessments of bud damage.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, this is second year in a row.
that you've been confident.
So we're quite used to doing bud dissections now.
Yeah.
And so I think we're fairly confident that the damage is quite widespread. We didn't see extensive damage to the grape vines themselves. The buds were damaged, but the old wood, the trunks, survived last year.
Yep.
And we're fairly confident that they'll survive, and we should have a normal crop in 2025.
Really?
Yeah.
So, yeah, normally now, would the vines want to push more after two bad years, or do they just sort of...
I think we're in unknown territory. it's difficult.
But normally they self-regulate, or...?
They do. We don't know much about vines. Vines are quite... Every year we learn something new about vines, and every year we're surprised what the vines can do.
Uh-huh.
And I think the vines will have to retrain the vines. So we'll have to take suckers from below, from just above the graft union, and we'll have to retrain the vine, and we're going to be going back from something that is, for example, a 3-year-old vine.
Mm-hmm.
And the vine itself, if the root system is untouched and the root system hasn't been damaged, that we've looked into, we don't have any damage to our roots. It didn't get that cold for long enough to damage the roots. So we've actually got something that has the potential to regain its full production capacity and quality quite quickly.
Yeah.
And so from that point of view, I am quite confident. You know, the building blocks are there, the base is there.
Yeah.
We just need to spend some time and effort to get the vines producing again.
Yeah. And in Soya Sclerose, because it's a different property, they basically produced one wine or two wines their whole life. How much wine do you have? Do you have a bunch of old wine? Like, will you be able to have some wine?
Yes, we've always kept back some back vintages.
Yeah.
And we've operated a bit differently, where we've only produced two wines and a small quantity of white. And so we do have quantity of Le Grand Vin. Obviously, it will run out eventually.
Yeah.
But we do have enough to see us through the next few years. And this is why I think we can get through this frost event.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's do something better and taste this wine. Because this is an old wine.
It's an old wine. So as we produce very few wines, when we come to events like this, we do like to bring out the back vintages. So we've got a 2013, which I think is drinking wonderfully now. It's still got that bright acidity, which I think is a bit of a hallmark of the Okanagan, which sort of keeps it together, keeps it fresh.
Yeah.
But it's moved on from those bright red fruits to something more tertiary and a bit more interesting.
People say to me, well, I write about wine like this, and I probably would have said pretty close to this back then, that this wine will easily age 10 years. So here we are at the 10-year mark. It actually looks very youthful today in the glass. Doesn't look like it's going anywhere real fast.
No, I think it's delicious.
Why is that? What is that? How would you describe that?
Our philosophy has always been the vineyard. As we've never bought any grapes, we've been forced to work with what we've got, and to make the most of this amazing piece of land we have. And so winemaking always starts in the vineyard. And I think we need to think about what makes a wine capable of aging. And I think it's the tannins, the acidity, the fruit, the alcohol, and all that can be adjusted in the vineyard through canopy management, irrigation, picking dates, even fertilizing.
Mm-hmm.
They can all have huge impacts on all these really important parameters. And 2013, with the vineyard was planted between 1998 and 2001. So 2013, the vines were starting to get into the sort of the young adult phase, and we understand how that vineyard works now. Mm. And so each year we understand better, we learn more things about it, and we make, I think, every year we make fantastic wines.
Will you, because of the 2 years of the damage, will you change the blend, do you think? Will you have to do that, or will it just...
I think we're going to have to start to replant some blocks.
Yeah.
That's inevitable. But we've always made a Merlot-dominant Bordeaux blend.
Yeah.
And I think that's what works for us.
Yeah.
The Okanagan is a really special growing region where it's so diverse, and it's small but diverse. You can have very, very different growing regions within sort of 5 kilometers of each other. But for where we are, Merlot, I think, is a killer. It's a winner. We've got this short growing season that can get quite extreme, and we need something that can ripen,
yep,
that can handle the heat, and it keeps the youthful, fresh fruit characteristics. And I think Merlot is fantastic. But then I love the Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, Petit Verdot, and Malbec, because they come and they add, each of them adds something different to the wine. And I think that the Merlot is the backbone of it. It provides the fruit, it provides the body, but then you've got the Cabernet Sauvignon, I think, just adds this elegance and this drive to the wine. And then the Petit Verdot, it just comes in at that 2-3%, and it just that last little, I don't know, that last little touch to the painting. And I think it's great. So I we'll always be making Merlot dominant Bordeaux blends, yeah, but how we plant them, how we prune them, maybe what rootstocks we use, the planting width, the orientations, that we'll start toying around with.
I thought it was a bit ironic, the sort of the classic story about the Bordeaux, the Bordeaux varieties and the plantings were that the Bordelais planted 5 or 6 varieties because they protected themselves against damage.
And also, I think, why is Cabernet Sauvignon traditionally in the Medoc rarely ripened?
Yeah.
Pre sort of, climate change of the 21st century.
Totally.
Cabernet Sauvignon, only in the best years, once every 10 years it ripened. But if not, it was Merlot was the basis.
Yeah.
But I think it's, what we've seen is with our 5 varieties, we've seen Cabernet actually come out better than, for example, Petit Verdot and Malbec in the last year with the frost.
Yeah.
But,
That's amazing. Well, and as we know, like Petit Verdot, which is probably the longest ripening one, the latest.
It is. We have harvested it under the snow in the past.
That was always the one to me that, like the 45s and the 61s and the 82s, those were the vintages when they didn't need the Petit Verdot, but they got it.
Yeah.
And that's why they became the special vintages in my mind.
I agree.
And then here we are in the Okanagan, and all 5 get whacked at once, which was so unfair.
It is.
But that's
farming. And I think we need to... It's difficult for winemakers and wineries because we are, in essence, mourning a lost vintage.
Yeah.
It is really difficult. And every vintage is what could be and what's it going to be like. And we're not going to have that.
But your group, of course, they have so much history and so much work laid down. I mean, for them, it's farming and... it's happened before.
It's going to happen again, and I think we should stay the course, and we should be positive, and we should focus on the good things of the valley.
Yeah.
And I think we'll get out of this, and we'll come out of this stronger.
Yeah, I totally agree. Okay, a couple things. White wines. What are you doing with white wines?
We are. So the first release of the white wine was 2023, which is a frost year. And I don't know if we're going to make any in 2024, but. When I arrived back in 2019, I love making white wine, even though I make red wine, and I thought Sauvignon Blanc and Semillon would be an absolute killer in the valley. Mm. Coming from Bordeaux, I'd made white wine with Sauvignon Blanc and Semillon, and I just thought there was something really interesting to be done here. And so we planted in 2020, about 3 acres of just Sauvignon Blanc and Semillon, some different clones, a different rootstock, see what was going on.
Yeah.
And then made the first wine in 2023. But in 2023, we planted another 7 acres of Sauvignon Blanc. Mm. And 2024, we're going to be planting another couple of acres of Semillon. So we'll have 10 to 11 acres of white. And the style I'm going for is I don't want to sort of say it's a Bordeaux style or a Kiwi style or a New World style or Loire style. I want to make an Okanagan wine, and I think that's what we've always done here.
That's great.
It's a Bordeaux blend, but it's an Okanagan blend.
Yeah.
Okanagan Bordeaux, and I think we want to do the same thing with the white. But I think freshness is the word I like to describe it. It's tight, it's fresh, it's bright. You know, it's stainless steel fermented on lees. There's a tiny bit of barrel. I put a tiny bit of a barrel just to see what it does, because it still is an experiment, and you'll get to try it this spring.
My guest has been Michael Coleman. He's the winemaker to Soyuz La Rose. We've been tasting the 2013, which is in magnificent shape. If you have it in your cellar, no rush, but it's showing well right now and proving that this is definitely a 10-year wine before you even have to worry about it. So that's kind of great. Thanks so much, Michael. It's great to have your upbeat comments today.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Yeah. We'll see you soon. I want to come by and taste that white wine.
You'll have to come.
Yeah.
Thank
okay.
you.
Michael Coleman, winemaker, Soyuz La Rose. Up next, Jean-Marc Nixon. He's the winemaker at Cumana Family Estate. This is BC Food and Wine Radio. I'm Anthony Gismondi.
There's more still to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio, live from the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Brought to you in part by the Westin Bayshore Vancouver, our official Vancouver hotel partner, and Elegant Bays to Explore Vancouver. Book your stay today at the Westin Bayshore Vancouver.
Attention wine connoisseurs, Iron Gate Auctions are bringing you the chance to indulge in some of the most exquisite back vintage wines from Canada's most exclusive private collections. Each bottle sold individually so you can pick and choose to your heart's content. With an average of 3,000 available per auction, there is something for everyone at all price points. And the best part? Inexpensive temperature-controlled delivery available right to your door. Visit irongateauctions.com to start bidding now.
Diora, the culmination of a more than 30-year vineyard-to-bottle journey in the Santa Lucia Highlands and the family-owned San Bernabe Estate in Monterey, California. Diora's fruit from their vineyard flourishes in the radiant Monterey midday sun, while refreshing breezes coax the complex flavors found in every drop. Diora, indulgence begins in the vineyard, now available at select liquor stores across BC. Find out more at diorawines.com.
Visit Penticton this winter for mountain adventures in South Okanagan wine. Experience the quieter time of year at one of the nearby wineries that stay open year-round and enjoy an intimate winter wine tasting. Stop into the Penticton Visitor Center for discounted lift tickets to Apex Mountain Resort for a day in the snow. Penticton is the perfect destination for your winter getaway. Before you go, check the website for information on wine tours, tasting room hours, and webcams for current conditions. Go to visitpenticton.com.
Now back to our spotlight stage at the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia. Welcome to the show. Our next guest, we haven't seen him in a while, Jean-Marc Nixon. He's the winemaker at Cumana Family Estate. Winery in the South Okanagan on the Golden Mile Bench. Welcome back. Good to
Thank
see you.
Thank you. Yeah. Good evening.
Yeah, good evening. It is a long night tonight.
Yes.
It's been a long day.
But yeah.
How is it out there?
It's good. No, trade was pretty good.
Yeah.
Everything is in English. That's my issue, but
yeah.
I work on that.
Yeah. Our issue is French, so, you know.
Yeah, we do what we can.
Yeah. Well, you brought a couple of really interesting wines. Let's talk a little bit about Cumana Family Estate. How could you describe the winery today to people who maybe haven't visited it yet or don't know much about it?
So it's a small estate, south of Oliver, 56 acres. A kind of a crazy project made by a crazy guy.
By a crazy guy, yeah.
But very smart guy, but
yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
So you need to be a little bit crazy and passionate, of course, to work there.
Mm-hmm.
So we have Viognier, Chardonnay, Grüner Veltliner, Petit Verdot, Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, Malbec. I forget few.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah. And you have a lot of altitude.
And we have, yeah. So we have different bench. So we are at 400 meters on the bottom.
Yeah.
And 600 at the top.
Yeah.
Where you have the Grüner and the Chardonnay and the Riesling.
Yeah.
But that's very interesting to keep the acidity to make the wine.
Yeah.
What's new? Also, we are certified organic since 2021 for
yeah,
the grape.
That's fantastic.
And if I do a good job, we'll be certified organic in 2024 for
okay.
the winery.
For the winery?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which some people, they don't understand that, but the winery needs to be certified too to make a truly organic wine.
Yeah. The longest, in fact, is the grape because you need 3 years.
Yeah.
And after the winery, it could be the same. In 1 year, it's done. You just need to show your process that respects everything.
Yeah.
And
how does a winery get organic, though? What's the key things happening inside the winery?
So you forget all the winemaking tools.
Yeah. Oh, boy. You mean you have to be a winemaker?
You need to have and get some luck.
Yeah, get some luck.
That's it. No, maybe 10 years ago it was harder, but now we have all what we need to be organic. It's not too hard to be organic in a winery.
Yeah.
It's more hard in the vineyard.
Yeah. Okay, I'm speaking with Jean-Marc Enix, and we're going to talk about a white wine here, which is a very rare wine in British Columbia, Gruner Veltliner. This wine is amazing. Are you surprised by the quality of this wine?
For the little story, I'm from Bordeaux.
Yeah.
So I'm a Gruner Veltliner specialist, like Chardonnay and everything.
Yeah.
So I learned the existence of the Gruner when I moved to Canada.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
When Don Trix told me that, hey, you are going to make Gruner Veltliner. I say, what? Gruner Veltliner.
Yeah.
No, what I like in this wine is he has some character. He has a soul. He is alive.
Mm-hmm.
It's from our top bench, so at 600 meters in altitude. So it's pretty interesting because it keeps nice acidity, but it's also a full body wine. We pick them, of course, by hand, press them, and it's going to a concrete tank and also neutral oak barrel, lot of wild ferment, because it's more interesting. It's a nightmare for me.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting. It's a very long ferment, like 3 months. In this way, the leaves are moving.
Yeah.
And so you get all this kind of nice shape after in most.
Yeah.
And it's a wine between like kind of Riesling and Chardonnay. It's balanced between both.
Yeah, yeah.
But with a lot of character. He has his own personality. So that's why I love to make this kind of wine, because they are true wine.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's exciting to make a wine like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost invigorating to make a wine like that.
Yeah.
I love that. So concrete, neutral, barrels. So.
Yep.
So you don't really want any big influence on the wine. Is it mostly for air to be in those containers? Or?
Yeah, just a hint. And it's easier to manage because it's a small continent.
Yeah.
And because, so you're at 14 of alcohol.
Yeah.
So to do wild ferment on that, you need to be very on it.
Yeah.
So if I lost a barrel, it's just one barrel.
Yeah. And where is Gruner on the ripening scale, like at the time of the year, like with Riesling or with Chardonnay or with I don't know what?
Alors, the issue is on the top of the mountain.
Yeah, so it's very high. Yeah.
So it's late for us.
Yeah.
But the Chardonnay is on the same level. It's pretty close to Chardonnay, in fact.
Okay.
But it's very interesting. Like in 2022, mm-hmm. it was a late year.
Mm-hmm.
The ripening happened after Chardonnay, but in 1 day. It was green, and I was like, come on, turn, and you can see the sugar level going up.
Yeah.
Green, and in 1 day, boom, and you pick.
That's a bit like Viognier then, eh? Sort of the switch flips on it.
Alors, Viognier, for my little knowledge about Viognier, I pick more to make sure that I have enough acidity.
Mm-hmm.
And Gruner, it's to make sure that it's not green.
Yeah.
It's a little bit, that's kind of same stress, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, delicious wine. I think under screw cap, everything is great about this wine. And the price is good, too. I think it's a terrific price at $29. You can't beat it. High quality. Well done. Thank you so much for bringing it.
Thank you.
That was the 22 that we had, folks. 2022 Unicus, $29 at Culmina. Now, you brought Hypothesis.
Yeah.
We were just talking about, we were talking recently with Michael Kuhlman at Asoyas La Rose. So he's making a Bordeaux red. This is a very Bordeaux red, too.
Yeah.
What is a Bordeaux red? Like, people use that word all the time, but, you know, what is it?
Bordeaux red. I'm from Bordeaux, so I'm from Fronsac.
Yeah, okay.
So Bordeaux red in Fronsac is Merlot.
Yeah.
It's like Pomerol.
Yeah, exactly.
But you go Bordeaux red in Médoc, it's Cap Sauve, Cap Franc, a touch of Merlot.
Yeah.
So it's just, we say Bordeaux red, it's to make sure that people can understand it. It's more like we use the five varietals, or one or two. So Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, Merlot, Malbec, and the Petit Verdot.
Petit Verdot, yeah.
But it's very you can do any kind of blend that you want. The wine could be very different.
Yeah.
And at one point, because we are in the Okanagan, and me, I try to express the terroir of the Okanagan, I will try to say, it's a Okanagan red.
Yeah.
But step by step,
we
go there.
It is an Okanagan red, but with those varieties, yeah.
Yeah.
What about, because the tradition is, for me, I think the best Okanagan red blends are Merlot dominant.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? Are you...
Alors, it's my little issue. It's Merlot, it's my nemesis since I moved here.
Your nemesis, love it.
Yeah. It's like I try to make good Merlot every year. I'm never happy about it.
Yeah.
I start to be happy since 2022.
Okay.
It's still in oak. Because sometime I was picking too late.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the same. It's the Okanagan. It's not Bordeaux. And I was always impressed with the Cab Sauv.
Yeah.
So hypothesis, how it is, it's this one, it's 30% Cab Sauv, 30% Cab Franc, 25% Merlot, and a touch of Petit Verdot and Malbec.
Yeah.
So everything is handpicked. We start usually... beginning of October, and we finish mid-November with the snow and the Petit Verdot. So it's a big red. It's a big red. Just start to open nicely, but you can keep it for 10 more years.
Yeah.
Ever. You need to enjoy that with a lot of friends and good food.
It's quite aromatic, eh? This wine. The hypothesis always had sort of a nice aromatic scent to it.
Yeah, and it's funny. Every year we try. It's a terroir expression because I get the same aromatic every year.
Mm-hmm.
So more we work, more we go, more I learn also because I'm here to learn. More I switch a little bit the blend, but it seems always going to work. It's like 40% Cab Sauv. Merlot Cab Franc, in fact.
Yeah.
And just a touch of Petit Verdot and Malbec. Malbec could be very powerful in a blend and take over everything. I love Malbec. But with this one, just a touch. Bit.
Like a spice or...
Exactly. It's very... You switch the blend at 1%, 2%, that changes the wine.
Yeah.
That's why it's funny. Well, it's a nightmare, but it's funny as well.
It's a nightmare. That's a good one. Well, that's nice. 2018, do you have a favorite since you've been here, a vintage that you think you like the best out of the bunch? Or?
Last year could be a good vintage. 23 was perfect, but it was like it was. So usually you learn from the past vintage.
Yeah.
The issue is every vintage is new. Every vintage is new right now since I moved to the Okanagan.
Yeah.
We get Heat Dome. We get snow,
smoke, fire,
frozen grape.
Stuff. Yeah,
like in 17, I cry. I sent a picture to my dad. It was 20 centimeters of snow, frozen Cabernet Sauvignon.
Yeah,
and I say, what I'm doing here?
Yeah,
but I pick them
and
I make wine, and they were very good.
Yeah, yeah, there you go.
That cook a little bit the tannin. So I don't have a favorite vintage. Every year is different. Every year it's a new challenge. For sure, we are not bored. It's part of the charming of the Okanagan.
And do you feel like you have more freedom than in Bordeaux or not? Or?
Yeah, we have way more freedom.
I
don't put all the time what I try in bottles. So, but I always try. I do a white Cabernet Franc. I work with a lot with wild fermentation, low input of winemaking. We do a natural Malbec. I can try a lot of
things.
I'm not scared.
Yeah. And you learn a lot from that.
And you learn a lot. Like, for example, the Chardonnay is not there, but I start to work with wild ferment in 2016.
Yeah.
And know that since 2019, everything is 100% wild ferment because it's good.
Yeah.
It's working well.
Yeah, yeah.
We are going to work more with the stem, for example, for the red, because that's going to help us to lower the alcohol.
Yeah.
And so we start to work, changing pump over, changing everything, and step by step.
Takes time, eh?
It always takes time. No, it's, and you need to do mistake.
Yeah.
A lot.
Oh, well, I'm good at that.
Yeah.
I can come work for you. You're going to stick around, right? You're not leaving
BC. Ask my wife.
Yeah, ask your wife. Okay, how's the... Yeah. Well, is your wife from France, no?
Yeah, she's French, but she starts Microbacquerie.
Oh, yeah?
So, no, she's successful.
She's okay with the Okanagan? Yeah. South Okanagan? Yeah. You found some cheese. It's everything's okay.
Well, it's
okay.
Not perfect.
Jean-Marc, so great to catch up with you today and to taste these two wonderful wines, the Unicus 2022. Wow, just a delicious wine. And the culminant 18. When will the 19 be out?
In 1 year, maybe?
Another year, yeah. Yep. So this is just coming out now, yep. Basically, the 18. Yep. Right on. Thanks so much. And by the way, it's $50. It's one of the least expensive high-end wines in the Okanagan.
That's true.
Yeah. Thanks so much for that.
You're welcome. That's not me. I'm just the guy.
Yeah, you're just the guy. Me too. We're just a bunch of guys. Jean-Marc Nixon, winemaker, Kamuna Family Estate. Up next, Justin Hall joins us from Nkamep Cellars. I should mention winemaker's dinner March 21st. The Maestro of Mediterranean.
Yep.
That's you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah, yep. In Kelowna, yeah.
Yeah, we'll put that up on our social media feed for folks to check out.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you. Have a good day.
This is BC Food and Wine Radio. I'm Anthony Gismondi. We'll be right back.
There's more still to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio, live from the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Brought to you in part by the Westin Bayshore Vancouver, our official Vancouver hotel partner, and Elegant Bays to Explore Vancouver. Book your stay today at the Westin Bayshore Vancouver.
Escape to Tin Horn Creek Vineyards on the captivating Golden Mile Bench in the heart of Oliver's Wine Country. Their wine shop awaits you Thursdays through Sundays from 11:30 to 4:30. Embrace the season with their Blanc de Blanc Sparkling, adding a lively note to your winter wanderings. Explore the wonders of the South Okanagan, where nature's beauty meets the art of winemaking. Plan your visit at tinhorn.com. Ready to welcome you.
Most people have a casual connection with wine, as in they like to drink it. We think it's essential to read the label and whenever possible to connect with the people who make the wine. They energize you, and unlike many businesses, they'll answer most all of your questions about where the wine comes from and how it's made. Then the next time you pour a glass of wine, you'll realize it's more than just something you like to drink. I'm Anthony Gismondi, and wherever you are in your wine journey, we'll meet you at gismondionwine.com.
Diora, the culmination of a more than 30-year vineyard-to-bottle journey in the Santa Lucia Highlands and the family-owned San Bernabe Estate in Monterey, California. Diora's fruit from their vineyard flourishes in the radiant Monterey midday sun, while refreshing breezes coax the complex flavors found in every drop. Diora, indulgence begins in the vineyard, now available at select liquor stores across BC. Find out more at diorawines.com.
It's BC Food and Wine Radio, live from the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi. We could have had it
better. Hello, British Columbia, and welcome to the show. Our guest is Justin Hall. We haven't seen him in a while, winemaker at Nkamep Cellars. Justin, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much. Great, I'm always glad to be with you.
Great to see you. I've known you since you were a young pup.
I got a little silver fox on top
when you
these
were
days.
Randy Picton's sidekick, and now you're the big boss.
Yeah, he was a great mentor.
He was, wasn't he?
20 years, 18 years of my life.
Yeah.
We were a
he was such a
team.
Calm guy. Really. I don't know.
Super popular at the wine fest. They called him like Mr. Smooth.
Yeah,
yeah,
Mr.
He was always
Slick.
Looking pretty good.
Yeah, you learned a lot from him, though.
Among many, many other winemakers in, you know, the industry, and just growing and evolving in my life.
Sure.
Your palate changes and you develop.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's good to see you. And how are things at Nkamep? You feeling good about the place?
Oh, I never had a more fun time. We're doing a lot of blends right now. We're working on barrel work that's downstairs, 2022s.
Yeah.
We had a smaller vintage last year, but, you know, the Osuya Siniban leases out 1,500, not quite 1,500 acres, 1,000, and we have 350 acres of our own fruit.
Yeah.
We got a lot of fruit to choose from. So luckily for us, we have a big diversity and a big portfolio we can look at for supplying our winery.
Yeah.
One of the few lucky ones.
Yeah, very lucky. Well, that's good to hear, and it's good to try some wine today. We're gonna start by talking about a Riesling. The Quemquemt Riesling is 2022. It's always been a great wine at Incomate, the Riesling. And yet it seems like it's grown pretty far south.
Yep.
And you would think that wouldn't be a place for Riesling, but why is it so good?
The biggest strength of our winery, and I've said this to every consumer who's ever come, is we have multiple vineyard sites that we can choose from. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to use this to the greatest diversity that I can. And we have hot sites and cooled sites. Mm-hmm. Like I said, we have 1,300 acres in our winery that we can source from. And so why would you not choose the best that you can? In a cold year, we can use the hotter, sites that we have. And in a warmer year, we can choose cooler sites. So what you'll notice in this is actually a 50-50 blend between the two. There's some tropicals, but there's also some tree fruits, some Granny Apple, Granny Smith. It's a nice,
super juicy.
Yeah, the thing about Riesling is it can sometimes be so sharp and acidic.
Yeah.
Or it can be really sweet. Yeah. And so I'm looking for balance. I'm looking for something that I want to have multiple glasses of.
Yeah.
And I heard from another winemaker, sit down, drink a glass. If you can have another at the end, you're probably on the right path.
Yeah.
If you can't keep drinking it, you're in trouble. You need to fix the wine. And so I've been finely tuning this wine for many years.
Mm-hmm. If we were to talk about sort of Enkemeep and the focus of the wines at Enkemeep, how would you describe, where you're at today?
Oh, good question. Trying to keep it as, we're not minimal intervention, we're not organic, but we're definitely aiming towards sustainability. Mm-hmm. I think it's super important for the native culture to be the forefront of that.
Yeah.
And we are looking into becoming certified sustainable.
Yeah.
It's not organic, but I think that it's very important for my people to say, here's our product, we want to be sustainable. We want to make sure that this earth that we're growing fruit on is available for the next 20 generations. I'm not going to rape and plunder and pillage the land to where it's unusable in the future. And we'll just grow concrete on it because there's nothing else going
to
grow.
Yeah, I mean, that only makes sense to me. I think it's...
I'm a huge supporter of the future.
In that direction. Yeah.
As you know, I was on the council for a little while with the band, and I learned a lot from the chief and the other councillors. And we have to look to future generations, and people are not doing that today.
No.
Very important to me because I have kids too, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
When we talk about the Osoyoos Indian Band, it's a progressive band.
Well, we work pretty hard, I think,
I think you do work
really
hard.
We were one of the, I can't say the first, but we were planted back in 1968. And without this deal that has been multi-generational, I wouldn't be here today either. Yeah. I think it's really important that we look back to our ancestors and realize they made some good decisions to get where we are.
Mm-hmm. Well said. I always tell the story. I don't know if you remember. We were walking back from the Desert Cultural Center. Did I get that right, the name? I guess that is.
Perfect.
Yeah, and we were heading back towards the winery, and you were picking up stuff, rocks and stuff on the sidewalk and putting them back in place. And I was just sort of looking. You looked back at me and said, if you don't do this, somebody's got to do it.
Somebody has to do it.
Otherwise it just doesn't get done. And you got to lead the way. So that's really important stuff.
I've been with the winery for 21 years now. Yeah. And I actually worked there before there was even a winery or a Spirit Ridge. There was nothing on, just a bump of sagebrush and greasewood.
Yep.
And when I look back to it and what we've come, how far we've come and our people have come, I want to give it 100%. And I have a real passion for my people, for my land, and for my winery. Yeah. And my wines, of course.
Okay, I want to tell a story because I interviewed you and I talked to you a bit about this special scent or this what I was tasting in the wines in the South Okanagan. And you said, and I said, what's the name for that? Because in many places, like in the south of France, it's Garrigue. And, in Argentina, it's Jarilla. And I said, what do you guys call it? And you said, I don't know, but I'm going to talk to some elders.
Yep.
And you came back with a name. They knew exactly what we were talking about.
Yeah, so...
I just can't pronounce it.
In your segment on YouTube, we can all go check it out there. Yeah. I still send it to friends. It's an awesome video. It's Sin-Eat Tim Hulauch. Sin-Eat Tim Hulauch.
Yeah.
Sweet-smelling place.
Yeah.
And it's the cycle of earth. It's like the breakdown of organic matter. When you smell, when you're going to grow a tomato plant, and you pick up that black earth and you put it to your face and you smell the diversity in the soil. Yeah. It doesn't just smell like sand.
No.
It smells
it
like...
It has a very distinctive savory sweet. Character, yeah. too, in the South Okanagan. And it, somehow it gets into the wine.
When you told me that, it really translated to me. I needed to spend more time smelling for it. And I trained my nose after that point. Yeah. Now I can smell the sweet sage. I'm sure it's sage and greasewood.
Yeah.
Because in the spring, when those little yellow flowers come out on the greasewood, you can smell that sweet. Yeah. And I call it, it's an Iti Mulauk. I say it every year.
That's so
it's
great.
It's so beautiful.
We should get that on a label, you know?
Yeah. They can't even pronounce it Kamee Park Club.
That's true. I was going to ask you about marine, but then I can hardly spell
that. Upside down E and two apostrophes. I can't.
Yeah.
Let's have something like Elements or, you know, another talent or Dreamcatcher.
No, I think we got to stick with the original. Let's talk a little bit about white wine. We talked about the Riesling. What about this Miriam?
Marriage.
Yeah. So this is a white Meritage?
Yep. Sauv Blanc and Semillon. And giving every year, you're going to have one feature that's a little stronger than the other.
Yeah.
We used to go as high as 33% in the Semillon blend.
Yeah.
I found it was more textured. I love the texture of it, but we were starting to lose the aromatics, especially on a year where Sauvignon Blanc wasn't as big.
Yeah.
So, in the 2022 vintage that we have is 90-10. Yeah. So, to be a Meritage, you must be 10%. It's just a little bit above that.
Yeah.
But it features the Sauvignon Blanc, and it really pops.
Yeah.
Tonight, when we're serving at the table, it's fun to watch people. I pour it, and they get it about 6 inches, and they go, whoa! Oh. They snap their heads back. It's really aromatic.
Yeah.
I say, you know what? I went to school with the Kiwis. Where do you think I learned to make Sauvignon Blanc from? It's like only natural that it should be very aromatic.
Yeah,
and so
totally.
I have my little, you know, tricks of the trade, and I work with special yeast varieties, and we have, again, 1,350 acres to choose from, which I only choose about 2 acres.
Yeah, nice. That's nice to have that selection.
I'm also a little think out of the box. This is something that's, everybody wants to grow vines as easy as possible. They start with the Cabernet Sauvignon on the north end, and they go all the way to the south, and they finish on Chardonnay. Mm-hmm. They treat it all the same. And to me, I absolutely flip out when they take my leaves off of my Sauvignon Blanc. Mm-hmm. I will have a heyday on them, and they don't hear the end of it. It's happened once, and they heard it for 2-3 years straight, and they never touch my leaves anymore. But on my Semillon, I want 100% of the leaves taken off, 95+.
Yeah.
I want to see full photosynthesis, and I want full exposure on the berries for those. It seems insane, and I actually thought I was going to get fired the first year because the big guy comes through and he says, what the heck is going on here?
Yeah.
These are white grapes, fully exposed. And I said, don't worry. Yeah. It's like a suntan.
Yeah.
We did it very, very early with the Cabernet Sauvignon back when they
sort of thicken up a bit and they protect themselves.
Beautiful, yeah.
Yeah.
You get that nice waxy texture out of it and almost like honeydew melon coming out.
Yeah.
And if you don't do it on our block, just ours personally, it tastes like nothing.
Yeah, right
so
on.
It's trial and error.
You guys are doing something interesting. You're doing these tastings, vertical tastings at the winery now on the weekends. How is that going? What can people get involved with in that?
You can go as deep as you want to go. But normally we feature about 5 wines. So let's say the last one I remember, which is maybe 2 months ago, was Syrah, and we also did a Chardonnay. It was 2015, 13, 14, 15, 16.
Oh, great.
Somewhere around there.
Yeah.
The interesting part was the 16 was the first vintage in a screw top, the Stelvin.
Uh-huh.
And the amazing difference between the 15 and the 16, I absolutely love screw tops.
You don't
tops
have to convince me, yeah. Yeah, they're the best.
Why would you? It's technology.
Why wouldn't you?
If I could make everybody love it, I would.
Well, you know, women love it, and they buy all the product. They buy 80% of the product. That's how I figured that screw caps were going to make it.
Yeah.
Because women, for them, it's easy to open and close, and they can put the top back on. That's another thing about screw caps. Have you ever seen one not on a bottle after you have everybody screws
back on. Yeah.
It's the most unusual thing.
I grabbed a QQ Merlot earlier, which is still in cork, and I went to undo it.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, no, it's still in cork.
Yeah.
It's like, oh.
And if you take a cork out, no one puts it back in.
Yeah,
so
it has to go upside down. Only if you can remove it properly.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to remove it properly. Otherwise, it's going to disintegrate in your bottle again.
Yeah. Well, Justin, you seem like you're having fun.
This is my 20... 21st year as a as in the industry. Yeah. I've been with Inc. Meep Cellars for 21 years. I've come to this festival for 20 years now.
Yeah.
I don't come every year because not every year you're invited. Mm-hmm. You know, they want to feature other wineries. But I've had a bit of experience here, and I've had great fun.
Yeah.
It's one of the best experiences you can have in Canada for diversity of wine. There's $300 bottles here you get to try for your ticket fee.
Yeah, the room's full of it. Yeah.
It's amazing.
So great. Just before I let you go, anything in the future?
Letting me go. We're staying on here. I'm going to stay for a while.
Yeah, okay.
Otherwise, I got to go pour wine again.
Yeah, everybody sits down. They say, I'm not leaving.
Future Incomeep. Nothing in the short term, you know. We had a team for 18 years together. It was Randy Picton, Aaron Cray, and myself, Justin Hall.
Yep.
And they both left me in 2021. And I started a new team. And I've had some come and go, but I've kept Nick Warner on for a couple of years now.
Yeah.
It's about building it back. It's not going to be easy.
No.
We had 2022, which are our biggest vintage we've had in many, many years, which thankfully, because we needed extra grapes in 23.
Yeah.
But it was very hard because I didn't have the guys that knew everything of the ins and outs.
Right.
And so first, focus on the inside.
Yeah.
And then we'll grow and build it back out again.
Yeah.
I want to build a strong team around me. You're only as strong as your weakest link, as they say.
Yeah.
So that's my my key story. And again, focus on the land and, you know, protect it as much as I can. Mm-hmm. Just look after it. It doesn't have to, you know, we got to make some money as well. But at the same time, we don't have to destroy our land.
You said it better than I can. Justin, thanks so much.
Incomeep Cellars, Justin Hall. Love you guys.
Great to catch up. Justin Hall, winemaker, Incomeep Cellars in the Soyuz, British Columbia. That's it for today's show. Plenty more to come in the next 2 weeks from our time here at the festival. This is the Food and Wine Radio Show. Special thanks to our technical producers, Mike Whittingham on site, Dwayne Bishop back in the home studio, Simon editor Sherry Caleb, Director of Operations Stu Ferguson. I'm Anthony Gismondi, and I wish you all a great week ahead and even better glass of wine.
That's it for today's show from the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Brought to you in part by the Westin Bayshore Vancouver, our official Vancouver hotel partner. An elegant base to explore Vancouver. Book your stay today at the Westin Bayshore Vancouver.